These same principles, which give us light on the significance of authority in civil society, may be used also to bring home to us the meaning of authority in the Catholic Church. We must simply take account of the supernatural quality of the end which is promised us, namely, the likeness, the resemblance to our Lord Jesus Christ in the vision of the Blessed Trinity. Our Lord, who has revealed this end to us, is alone capable of guiding us thereto, for the hierarchy of agents corresponds to the hierarchy of ends. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of our whole supernatural life. Now Jesus, for a time visible, invisible since his ascension, grouped around him the members of the Apostolic College, on whom he conferred the powers of jurisdiction and of the administration of the sacraments. Through them he communicates himself to the body of the faithful. If with St. Thomas we distinguish the two essential roles of the head in the physical body and apply the analogy to the head of the mystical body, we shall see that it belongs to Christ as priest to communicate the divine life to his members and to Christ the King to direct the movements of his members with a view to favoring the impouring of that life. The power of jurisdiction in the Church is a participation in the royalty of Christ, and the power of sanctification through the sacraments a participation in the priesthood of Christ. Authority in the Church comes then from Christ the King, and has for end to raise us to perfect likeness to our Lord Jesus Christ, firstborn among many brethren. Authority in the Church is therefore doubly supernatural by its end, which is resemblance with Christ, and by its origin, which is our Lord's free determination. The Church will then always adapt herself, in the first place, to the supernatural ends which have been revealed to her. Never will she consent to sacrifice even the least of the treasures confided to her care. She adapts herself, in the second place, to the weakness and ignorance of her children, in the measure in which the exigencies of her end and her supernatural origin allow her to do so. She adapts herself not by lowering her dignity, but by condescending to raise us in her embrace. She knows that she can and ought to command and oblige supernaturally in conscience, and that she must sometimes punish for the destruction of the flesh, that the spirit may be saved in the day of our Lord Jesus Christ. Opposed to this Catholic doctrine of authority is the Rousseauist doctrine that authority comes from below. Accordingly, authority has not to adapt itself in the first place to the objective end. It must adapt itself primarily to the structure and configuration, in a word, to the mentality of its subjects. Its first care must be not to lay down obligations in view of an end to be attained, but to consult the multitude, not to impose respect of what is right, but to accept a fact, not to subject the multitude to an end, but the end to the multitude. Now, it is absolutely contradictory to assert that authority comes from below. We either maintain the authority, and then we must say that it comes from above, or we admit that it comes from below, and then we necessarily subvert authority. Authority is undermined when it is asked to abandon the obligation arising from the end to be attained in order to ratify the caprices of its subjects, that is to say, when we ask it to shut its eyes to what is right and just in order to accept a whim of the multitude. If, on the one hand, authority renounces the pursuit of what is right and just, it subverts its mission by abdicating its rights. If, on the other hand, it accepts the caprice of the majority, it subverts its position by oppression. In both cases, the result is the same. Authority may subvert its mission by abdicating its rights. It does this when it begins to doubt of its right to command. This form of suicide on the part of authority is more frequently to be met within the domain of teaching. According to the correct doctrine, the first duty of the teacher is to keep the end of all education well in view. This end is to strengthen a fallen being, restored to supernatural life by our Lord, to direct all his energies to the development of that life in and through the mystical body, in preparation for the fullness of that life in union with the three divine persons. The second duty of the teacher is to look for every means to help the child in this task. In opposition to this correct outlook, Rousseau in Emile lays down that the first duty of the teaching authority is to adapt itself to the individuality of the child. From Emile, quote, "The master is on a visit to the child. It would not be becoming for him to speak before the pupil invites him to do so," end of quote. Such are the expressions used at the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, founded at Geneva, to carry out the principles of Emile. If these principles are followed out logically, pedagogy will become the art of following those whom one should guide. Quote, "I foresee," states Emile's teacher, "how many masters will be surprised to see me educating my pupil during his youthful years without speaking to him of religion. At 15, he did not know if he had a soul, and it is perhaps too soon for him to learn this at 18, end of quote. Pope Pius XI, in his wonderful encyclical on the Christian education of youth, has condemned these theories of education in terms so admirable that the whole passage must be quoted. Quote,